Thank you, boys, for that beautiful singing tonight as we enter into Holy Week. I guess, boys, for you, a lot of your friends must think, why on earth spend the week you're meant to be off school in church so much? The good thing for you is that this week, because of the pandemic, you're not in church as much, but you'll still be experiencing it each day. And this week we have 14 sermons. So tonight I thought rather than, yes, Max, your eyes went really big then. Yeah, 14 sermons. So instead of a sermon tonight, I'm going to read you a story. And it's a beautiful story that I love to read in Holy Week. I want to tell you why I like to read this story. And the anthem you sang kind of says it all. I sometimes think about the cross and shut my eyes and try to see the cruel nails. Parents, I don't know if you're at home watching or here in church today, you've ever given one of your sons a gift, maybe a really fancy pair of sneakers or a bike or a computer game or just something lovely that you spent a lot of time, and their expression is, oh. Yeah, you're all laughing because it's happened to me many times with my kids. And boys, have you ever spent time taking a lot of time to make something beautiful? Maybe it didn't cost you much money at all, but you put a lot of effort in for a friend. You go out of your way and that person says, is that it? Has that happened to you? You're nodding. Yeah. My dear friend, old friend, Archbishop Michael Ramsay used to tell a story of some very naughty teenage boys. I know you're naughty. Every Saturday, the priest used to go to church and sit to hear people's confessions. And they decided one Saturday they were going to go in and they were going to make fun of him by thinking of the worst things they could possibly have done, the worst sins, the most terrible things. So they worked it all out and they went in after each other, and one by one, they told the priest all these things, including lots of things they couldn't possibly have done. And do you know what? The priest just sat there and listened. And listened till they'd finished. And then Michael Ramsay said, do you know what he did next? I said, no. He said to the boys, I want you to go to the back of the church and I want you to look for that really big crucifix. And I want you to kneel down and I want you to look up at Jesus dying on the cross and look at the crown of thorns and look at his blood and the nails and the tears in his eyes. And I want you to look him in the face and say, oh, my Lord, you have done all this for me. And I couldn't care less. So this is the story I love to read in Holy Week. It's one of Oscar Wilde's short stories, and it's called The Nightingale and the Rose. And you'll see why it fits in so well with the anthem you've just sung. Oh, and it's an abridged version, so parents, you'll have to look up the full version to read at nighttime. She said she would dance with me if I brought her a red rose, cried the young student. But in my garden there is no red rose. From her nest in the holm oak tree, the nightingale heard him, and she looked out through the leaves and wondered. No red rose in all my garden, he cried, and his beautiful eyes filled with tears. Oh, on what little things does happiness depend? Here at last is a true lover, said the nightingale. Night after night have I sung of him, though I knew him not. Night after night I have told his story to the stars, and now I see him. The prince gives a ball tomorrow night, murmured the young student, and my love will be in the company. If I bring her a red rose, she will dance with me till dawn. If I bring her a red rose, I shall hold her in my arms. Oh, but there's no red rose in my garden, so I shall sit lonely. She'll pass me by. My heart will break. And he flung himself down upon the grass, buried his face in his hands, and wept.
"Why is he weeping?" asked the little green lizard as he ran past him with his tail in the air.
"Why, indeed," said a butterfly who was fluttering about after a sunbeam.
"Why, indeed," whispered a daisy to his neighbour in a soft, low voice.
"He is weeping for a red rose," said the nightingale.
"For a red rose?" they cried. "How very ridiculous."
And the little lizard, who was something of a cynic, laughed out loud. But the nightingale understood the secret of the student's sorrow, and she sat silent in the oak tree and thought about the mystery of love. Suddenly, she spread her brown wings for flight and soared into the air. She passed through the grove like a shadow, and like a shadow she sailed across the garden. In the center of the grass plot was standing a beautiful rose tree, and when she saw it, she flew over to it and lit upon a spray.
"Give me a red rose," she cried, "and I will sing you my sweetest song."
But the tree shook its head. "My roses are white," it answered,
"as white as the foam of the sea and whiter than the snow upon the mountains. Go to my brother who grows around the old sundial. Perhaps he will give you what you want."
So the nightingale flew over to the rose tree that was growing around the old sundial.
"Give me a red rose," she cried. "I will sing you my sweetest song."
But the tree shook its head.
"My roses are yellow," it answered, "as yellow as the hair of the mermaiden who sits upon an amber throne, and yellower than the daffodil that blooms in the meadow before the mower comes with a scythe. But go to my brother who grows beneath the student's window. Perhaps he will give you what you want."
So the nightingale flew over to the rose tree that was growing beneath the student's window.
"Give me a red rose," she cried. "I will sing you my sweetest song."
But the tree shook its head. "My roses are red," it answered, "as red as the feet of the dove and redder than the great fans of coral that wave and wave in the ocean cavern. But the winter has chilled my veins, the frost has nipped my buds, the storm has broken my branches. I shall have no roses at all this year."
"One red rose is all I want," cried the nightingale. "Only one red rose. Is there no way by which I could get it?"
"There is a way," answered the tree, "but it is so terrible, I dare not tell it to you."
"Tell it to me," said the nightingale. "I am not afraid."
"If you want a red rose," said the tree, "you must build it out of music by moonlight, and stain it with your own heart's blood. You must sing to me with your breast against the thorn. All night long you must sing to me, and the thorn must pierce your heart, and your lifeblood must flow into my veins and become mine."
"Death is a great price to pay for a red rose," cried the nightingale. "Yet love is better than life, and what is the heart of a bird compared to the heart of a man?
So she spread her brown wings for flight and soared into the air. She swept over the garden like a shadow, and like a shadow she sailed through the grove. The young student was still lying on the grass where she'd left him, and the tears were not yet dry in his beautiful eyes. "Be happy," cried the nightingale. "Be happy. You shall have your red rose. I will build it out of music by moonlight and stain it with my own heart's blood." The student looked up from the grass and listened, but he could not understand what the nightingale was trying to say to him, for he only knew the things that were written down in books. But the oak tree understood and felt sad, for he was very fond of the little nightingale who had built her nest in his branches. "Sing me one last song," he whispered. "I shall feel very lonely when you are gone." So the nightingale sang to the oak tree, and her voice was like water bubbling from a silver jar. The student went into his room and lay down on his little pallet bed and began to think of his love, and after a time, he fell asleep. And when the moon shone in the heavens, the nightingale flew to the rose tree and set her breast against the thorn. All night long she sang with her breast against the thorn, and the cold crystal moon leaned down and listened. All night long she sang, and the thorn went deeper and deeper into her breast, and her lifeblood ebbed away from her. She sang first of the birth of love in the heart of boy and girl, and on the topmost spray of the rose there blossomed a marvelous rose, petal following petal, a song followed song. Pale was it at first, as the mist that hangs over the river, pale as the feet of the morning, and silver as the wings of the dawn, as the shadow of a rose in a mirror of silver, as the shadow of a rose in a water pool. So was that rose that blossomed on the topmost spray of the tree. But the tree cried to the nightingale to press closer against the thorn. "Press closer, little nightingale," cried the tree, "or the day will come before the rose is finished." So the nightingale pressed closer against the thorn, and louder grew her song, for she sang of the birth of passion in the soul of a man and a maid. And a delicate flush of pink came into the leaves of the rose, like the flush in the face of the bridegroom when he kisses the lips of the bride. But the thorn had not yet reached her heart, so the rose's heart remained white, for only a nightingale's blood can crimson the heart of a rose. And the tree cried to the nightingale to press closer against the thorn. "Press closer, little nightingale," cried the tree, "or the day will come before the rose is finished." So the nightingale pressed closer against the thorn, and the thorn touched her heart. And a fierce pang of pain shot through her. Bitter, bitter was the pain. And wilder grew her song, for she sang of the love that is perfected by death, of the love that dies not in the tomb. And the marvelous rose became crimson, like the rose of the eastern sky. Crimson was the girdle of petals, and crimson as a ruby was the heart. But the nightingale's voice grew fainter, and her little wings began to beat, and a film came over her eyes. Fainter and fainter grew her song, and she felt something choking in her throat. Then she gave one last burst of music. The white moon heard it and she forgot the dawn and lingered on in the sky. The red rose heard it, and it trembled all over with ecstasy and opened its petals to the cold morning air. Echo bore it to her purple cavern in the hills and woke the sleeping shepherds from their dreams. It floated through the reeds of the river, and they carried its message to the sea. "Look, look," cried the tree. "The rose is finished now." But the nightingale made no answer, for she was lying dead in the long grass with a thorn in her heart. At noon, the student opened his window and looked out. "Why, what a wonderful piece of luck," he cried. "Look, here's a red rose. I've never seen a rose like it in all my life. It's so beautiful. I'm sure it has a long Latin name." He leaned down and he plucked it. He put it on his hat and ran up to the professor's house with the rose in his hand. "You said you would dance with me if I brought you a red rose," cried the student. "Here is the reddest rose in all the world. You will wear it next to your heart, and as we dance together, it will tell you how much I love you." But the girl frowned. "Oh, I'm afraid it will not go with my dress," she answered. "And besides, the Chamberlain's nephew has sent me some real jewels. And everybody knows that jewels cost far more than flowers." "Well, upon my word, you are very ungrateful," said the student angrily, and he threw the rose into the street. It fell into the gutter, and a cartwheel went over it. "Ungrateful," said the girl. "I tell you what, you are very rude. And after all, who are you? You're only a student. Why, I don't believe you've even got silver buckles on your shoes, as the Chamberlain's nephew has." And she got up from her chair and went into the house. "Oh, what a silly thing love is," said the student as he walked away. "It's not half as useful as logic. It does not prove anything. In fact, it's quite impractical. And as in this age, to be practical is to be everything, I shall go back to philosophy and study metaphysics." So he returned to his room and pulled out a great dusty book and began to read. "But even could I see him die, I should but see a little part of that great love which, like a fire, is always burning in his heart."